Author of the Week, featuring another great creator of narratives for the human race on Southside Broadcasting and Siren Radio.
The joys of fantasy and fantasy in reality. Well, maybe we should just embrace that magic, especially when young Samuel longs to perform magic of his own. And what's worse, he can't seem to convince anyone that their beloved town magician is a trickster without an enchanted bone in his body. Clearly, this could almost be a parable for our political situation today. Maybe not. We have the author and creator, of course, of this fabulous book, Embracing the Magic, with us at present. It's the wonderful S.A. Schneider. Stephen, welcome to the Author of the Week feature, and congratulations on being this week's Author of the Week on Siren Radio.
Great. Thank you. Hi, Alex. How you doing? Chloe, hi.
Great. Hello. How are you?
We've also got Chloe Rose.
I love the goggles.
Dulcet tones of Chloe Rose, the inner car, obviously taking the midweek drive seriously from this point of view and part of this whole Author of the Week experience. So, Stephen, share with us. I presume Embracing the Magic isn't actually a political allegory for us getting the politicians we deserve who don't even have a magical bone in their body, whoever they are, Biden or indeed Truss.
Right. Well, yeah, it's funny, though, speaking of that, there's no political, no religion really in this book. But don't we always get that out of fantasy and science fiction? Don't people always try and say, oh, this is this and this is that? And there's none of that. I wrote a story for kids. I just was enjoying a world. So, yeah, you might be able to pick some things out of it, but it really is just about magic and fantasy.
Or we can see that you're possibly a bit of a fantasy fan, because for the benefit of the listener, behind you, you have posters from Raiders of the Lost Ark, from Star Wars, you've got a Millennium Falcon detail out from that point of view. And as Chloe said, you're wearing a very fetching pair of steampunk-oriented goggles, which is very impressive from that. I mean, is it true to say that you might, or is it a case of no, do you not see the Def Leppard sign? I'm much more of a Def Leppard fan. It's the music that is what it's all about for me.
Yeah, well, this, I guess you could say, is part of my author persona. My whole goal in thinking is showing kids that there's magic in the world, showing kids that they can go on adventures and trips by reading. And so I'm all prepared for an adventure. I've got my goggles. I've got my suspenders that look like galaxies and dragons on my shirt. So I'm ready for whatever adventure comes my way. And I can make my choice of where I want to go, what book I want to choose and read right now.
Well, when she's not actually doing fabulous music and producing great records such as the delightful Golden Sun, Chloe Rose is also a drama teacher. So Chloe, any thoughts or questions you'd like to put to Stephen at present?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, first of all, I'm loving the outfit. I know I said earlier, I love the goggles. And the magic of you and the fantasy side of it shines through for your personality as well, which is really nice. I love that. I've been reading a bit about the book, actually. Nice. And, the fact that it's based on magic and Samuel's like the main character. And it's about him, you know, is he like a wizard himself then? But he's discovered there's a trickster amongst the town as well. And is he trying to make them find out about that? Tell us more about the actual book.
In Samuel's world, there's magic all around. Magic exists in the world just like air does, but only certain people can channel it. And those are the magicians. There's different levels. And Samuel, unfortunately, has not been able to channel and get magic. He loves magic. He would love to be a magician, but he can't. And his father even forbids him from being around magicians. So he has to sneak around. So he's got kind of a rough life. They're kind of the outsiders of the town. And in their world, it used to be ruled by soldiers, but then when magic got discovered and released into the world, which is a prequel story that I thought of way after I started this series, that's when magic took over and the magicians became more powerful than the soldiers. So you don't have soldiers too much anymore. And now that they've kind of gotten their world under control and we don't have the monsters, the magicians do shows, and the powerful magicians attract more people. That helps the town grow. So that's how their ecosystem works, very different than ours. And Samuel tries to do everything he can to get to see magic shows. And in the course of this book, they go on an adventure to the Grand Wizard, because Rory has to get trained to fight this evil magician trying to take over towns. And you can see throughout the book whether Rory really does have magic or what he can do. And then we find out if Samuel has magic, because he tries to get the Grand Wizard to tell him, hey, do I have magic or not? So that's part of the whole exploration of the book.
Sounds great. I love it. Very magical.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Sorry, I keep wanting to ask more. What sort of inspired this, you know, you to write this? You know, what was, where, when did it happen? When was the inspiration, you know, for it?
This is actually the third book that I've written, and the first one I'm releasing. And that we have here in Kent State, a local wizarding fest every year based on Harry Potter, but we can't say Harry Potter, it's just the wizarding world. I wanted to set up an author table a couple years ago. So I said, but I don't have a book that's wizard and magic based, so I better write one. So I came up with a really quick short story that was about 7,500 words, and I was getting all ready to set up my author table and talk to all the kids and, you know, teachers. That's a big part of my, what I do is working with parents and teachers as ready to do this. And then I realized that there needed to be more to the story. So I edited and I added, and pretty soon I had a 40,000 word book with seven more books planned. So I didn't actually make it to the Wizard Fest that year. And then the year after, COVID hit and they didn't do it. And last year, I had a conflict and it was very limited. So hopefully next year I'll be able to actually set up with this book and book two and some short stories that I've written and explore the whole world that Samuel lives in.
Ooh, very good.
The concept of the Romans built or the coming of age story is something that goes way, way back. I mean, Ursula K. Le Guin was writing about it with her Earthsea Quartet with Ged, the wizard. And in many ways, if you've read some of Ursula K. Le Guin's work, you kind of paved the way for Harry Potter and obviously what J.K. Rowling did from that point of view. Was that something you had in mind very much, Stephen, at the heart of this whole process? I mean, looking behind you again, actually, Luke Skywalker in Star Wars goes through the same kind of journey of discovery. Like from that, Chloe is a huge fan of Stranger Things and the Marvel Universe. That's jam-packed full of people going through that whole process. So is it something which you think, yeah, this is perfect? Or has there ever been a time where you thought, actually, I want to break the boundaries here and do something completely different?
Well, we all think we want to do something completely different, and we all think we're going to, but I realized, come on, I'm going to a wizard fest based on Harry Potter, and I'm putting up a story about a magician. I mean, come on, it's kind of almost derivative of Harry Potter, but Star Wars has been a huge influence in my life, so I feel there's a lot of Star Wars-like elements in the story. But again, both of those are just based on the hero's journey that Campbell talked about. So when you talk about coming of age, yes, it's a coming of age story, and there's tons of those. And not that we don't need more necessarily, because sometimes kids need the fantasy to understand and reach out and feel a part of it. Kids are different. So yeah, you know, you could pick up a dozen coming of age stories, you could pick up a dozen wizard fantasy books and say that, oh, I took it from all of them. But you know, we all kind of do. That's our influences. That's what we do. I just hope my thoughts of how they perform magic, with magic being in the world everywhere, it's just absorbed into them, essentially, that's a little different than what others portray. If nothing else, I hope they like my characters with Samuel and Clarice and Rory. I tried to get a nice cast. And the Grand Wizard, if you've ever seen The Sword in the Stone, and you know, the wizard there based on Merlin, and Merlin was said to time travel and move back in time type of thing. And so I based my wizard a little bit on that. He makes little references and comments that the other people are like, what are you talking about? Because they have no clue. You know, he says, oh, well, you know, let's feed the chickens before the early bird gets the worm and stuff. They're like, I don't want a worm, because that's not a saying on their world. But he might have a little more connection throughout the multiverse, you could say. So I put little hints in there. And hopefully it's kind of that Looney Tunes thing too, where the kids can read the book, enjoy the book, like Samuel, laugh at Clarice and Rory and all that, But then when the parents are reading it with them, they're like, oh, I get that reference that the wizard's saying. So it has a different level for parents. That's what I was hoping to get out of it. If nothing else, I was just letting loose with all my influences. So like Stranger Things, you know, if you love the 80s, you make a story based in the 80s, heck, put in every video game and movie and song that you loved, right? Look at Kate Bush right now. She's now got a big hit after 30 some years because of that. So, you know, I've got influences that I put into my book definitely from my life. And hopefully more kids read it. The parents enjoy it also. That's kind of the goal.
Bye.
pop culture of Kate Bush running up that hill continues ever onwards. Is why we just see a little bit of Kate there. Got to ask the question, do you actually have a wolf, Stephen?
I actually do. He's right out there. You couldn't see him with the camera if I turned it, but his name is Hunter Moon Moon. He's a 75% wolf, and he's a big boy. And I know my son has scared friends with him. I had friends over and they go, well, let's go walking and, you know, let's go up to the cabin, blah, blah, blah. And they get, and then Kong goes, oh my God, there's a wolf, run, and freaks his friends out. And he's laughing because this is a, like 150, 160 pound dog. And he is extremely lovable, extremely goofy. When you go up to him, he's like, and he gets all excited and he'll roll over on his belly. And we had another dog, a Dalmatian female. She was like 15 pounds and she would growl at him and he'd be like, oh, I'm sorry. You know, he's like five times bigger than she is. And he's afraid of her. So yeah, I got a wolf. He's a goofball. No one should ever be afraid of him. And he's very lovable. Very love his fur. He's got wonderful fur. And in fact, I've got a series of books I'm working on that was kind of based around interests with my kids and influences from my kids' personalities. And in one of the stories, Hunter is in that story. I put him in the story.
So Hunter is a famous wolf. Does he dance? I mean, I have to say, does he dance with wolves? No, it's a bit.
No, he doesn't. In fact, he'd probably, we always tell him, because he's afraid of the other dogs sometimes, and he gets on his belly and puts his feet up, and we're like, Hunter, the other wolves are laughing at you.
It's obviously tough if you're Hunter as a goofy wolf, but never mind.
Right.
It's extraordinary. I mean, I'm just intrigued. Was that a personal choice as a young to actually have a wolf? Did it adopt you? Did you adopt him? Because I mean, you know, we go for Chihuahuas, we can go for Alsatians, we can go for many and varied forms of canine friends. We've just done a feature, and an upcoming we'll be talking about a feature for how to look after our pets in the this particular period of time where obviously it might be getting pretty warm. How to cope with them? Whether they go to the seaside? Whether they get sand in their paws? But a wolf, why?
I acquired him through marriage. He came with everybody else. So
it's love me, love my wolf then, basically.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So I got a cat that I think is the reincarnation of Evel Knievel. So some interesting animals.
I don't think we can let you go with respect to that one, Stephen. A cat as a reincarnated Evel Knievel. Is he prone to get on motorbikes and actually take off over several London double-decker buses? How do we know this?
I've kept the toy motorcycles away because I'm afraid he'd try it. All I know is I was laying in bed one night and the cats were running around wrestling. And literally he was on the ground, ran toward my bed, leapt right over my whole bed and landed on the other side. And I'm like, how the heck did you just do that? And he'll get on my dresser, which is higher than the other cats can jump up to. So I don't know how he gets there. And he jumped from the dresser to my bed. And I'm like, that's like 22 feet away. What are you doing? So, yeah, I think he's the reincarnation of Evel Knievel.
So, Stephen, this sounds as though there's a whole new series waiting to be written about your cats and wolves and so on.
I need to do an animal book.
Yeah, it would work. Chloe, back to yourself. Any thoughts or questions for Stephen?
Yes. So, have you got any sort of ambitions? Well, I know you've got loads of ambitions, but any more goals maybe that would you like one of your like novels to be on a TV series or film or, you know?
If the Duffer Brothers were picking up the phone, they're listening to this podcast and they're saying, look, Stephen, We've done all we can do with Stranger Things. We know Chloe Rose loves Stranger Things, but we need to have a follow-up series. Would you be interested in doing something with the Duffer Brothers for Netflix?
Who would turn that down? And the thing is, I know a lot of people would want this, that, and the other thing, but honestly, if anybody said, hey, I want to do this, it may not be the best deal, but if I got to meet somebody or I got to be in part of it or just witness, that's an experience, you know, that I would take over in a second. What would be ideal? I would love, first of all, if it was something professional and big, a cartoon series. What would make me happy is if somebody would make it into a cartoon that would be a Saturday morning cartoon. I think we should have Saturday morning cartoons back. And I think this would be perfect. But really, a large part of the goal of what I'm trying to do is not just write books, but work with kids to become writers and understand that they can be writers their whole life, that they can still go become a tax accountant. They can still go be a lawyer. They can be a truck driver. They can be anything. And they could still write. They could write novels. They could write books on the side. And that's a skill they could start now. And they don't need to wait till they get through college, like a doctor or something. And those skills learned now when they're 18 and out of school, they'll be better at it than most people starting from scratch as an adult after family or something. So it's one of the things I'm working with parents and teachers and homeschooled parents, teachers, and to get their kids interested in writing, using their imagination, because that's the magic. That's where I consider magic in the world. Kids' imaginations, we sometimes tamp that down in school and in life, and especially as they get to be adults. So one of my goals is to help parents, to help kids and show them that they can be writers. They can continue to play with Legos. Even if it's not little pieces, it could be a world and writing about it. That's a bigger goal of mine than just getting a bunch of books out, which is just part of the whole everything.
As we said, we've covered the Wolf system, Lego and action figure days. We're going to come back into that. But Chloe, I just bring yourself back into the piece for the moment. You're shortly about to start the second year of your time as a professional teacher at Skegness Academy. Do you consciously try to ensure that the students you're teaching, that you're guiding through, have that sense of wonder, whether it's playing with Lego figures or talking about wolves? Well, maybe not in Grimsby, but still. other football teams are available. Sorry, soccer. It's a different line. Is it something that is close to your heart in terms of ensuring that that imagination that Stephen so very eloquently described there is maintained throughout adulthood?
Yeah, absolutely. Because I honestly think if you can make the lesson fun, the kids are more enthused. They want to get involved. They want to learn more. And kids, you know, they take things like a sponge. They are like a sponge. And they want to take that knowledge in. But I think sometimes we can sort of structure a lesson in a certain way. You know, sometimes I think, oh, you know, this is a bit boring and whatever. But if we bring them on a journey and create a story, you know, like you're saying as well, which is brilliant, I think they want to do more. You know, sometimes even if it's, I'll start performing in front of the kids and do something, and then I'll get some of the kids to join me and volunteer and get involved. And that gets, it's just, you know, making the lesson a bit fun rather than just sat watching all the time or, you know, listening to someone talk. It's, yeah, I definitely think that's important. And I just love your enthusiasm as well. I just wanted to say that, you know, it really comes across. Quickly, I wanted to ask, what was I going to say? Oh gosh,
I do that all the time.
You know when you get so excited.
Chloe, you're too young to be having senior moments.
A million things going on.
How did it start for you? You know, how did you know, wow, I absolutely love writing. This is something I always wanted to do. When did the love for that start? You know, tell me.
That's the writing I had about 10 years ago. I was a Girl Scout leader, and I thought the kids were reading a lot of interesting books, and this was the beginning of all the stuff now where we have so many female characters and that. But I think it was before that I was thinking, there's not a lot. I'm here with a Girl Scout troop and they're reading the same about Harry Potter, a boy. Now, Hermione's wonderful in that book, but it's not the main character. So I wanted to write a story for the girls that they would be interested in, and with a main girl character. And that was my first book that's still kind of sitting in the shelf. You know, I'll get to it maybe again, but it was magical based, superhero magic based, and she was super smart, like with chemistry. So I made her a little bit like MacGyver, another one of my influences. And the writing
is this Richard Dean Anderson MacGyver, or is it new version MacGyver?
Because it's definitely RDA. Yeah, definitely RDA. But yeah, I gotta give the new one some kudos. They tried to bring it back. They went in a slightly different direction. So the old one still is near and dear to my heart. So
it's a bit like Magnum PI with Tom Selleck or Magnum PI with Jay Hernandez. Very difficult. Know,
that's tough because Tom Selleck Magnum was great. But honestly, the new one, I think, is wonderful. I love the new show. And it got canceled, but then picked back up on another station. So I'm so excited that that type of stuff happens now too. Because I like that show, and Hawaii Five-O, the new one I liked. That's my, that, you know, closer to my era. The older one was pre my era. I never got into it too much.
Oh, you should check out The 92nd War, Season 4, two-parter, Jack Lord at his finest, written by John D.F. Black, who also wrote the Naked Time episode of Star Trek. I'm just saying.
Oh, well, hey, I'll check that out then. You know, you get the same writers that wrote some of those good Star Treks. Okay, I'll go check it out. I can stream it. I know I can stream it somewhere.
Exactly. It's how Residence Rewind works on a regular basis. We're right up to Sapphire and Steel now. But let's move on to, again, musical influences. I mean, we talked about Def Leppard earlier. We heard some Kate Bush. Are you a writer who likes to have a playlist all set out? So you say, right, I'm going to actually get this playlist sorted. I put this in my CD, got the mix thing in there, start off with a Chloe Rose number, go into another one, and so on and so forth, whatever. Or is it a case of, no, I can only listen to soundtracks, or do you have to have complete silence? Or is it a case of, I only like to hear the sound of wolves calling to the moon in the background?
Music is huge in my life. In fact, I've got open right here. I put on pause before we started. I've got a playlist of my 97 favorite songs ever in the world, the ones I never changed the radio station. I was listening to that before. It puts me in a good mood. I used to be called my summer playlist that me and the kids would listen to kick off summer. Now it's my all-time favorites. Music is huge. I was a musician all through school. I played drums in school, but took piano lessons. And then in high school, my friends handed me a bass guitar and said, here's the notes. These are frets. Let's go. And we played on our stage at school, 3-4 months later. I worked on a cruise ship for a while. So yeah, music has always been big. In fact, right now I've been slowly paying off an electric drum set I'm buying off a friend and changing my living room into a music studio, setting up the keyboard. I got a new keyboard stand. I'm learning guitar I've never learned. So the playlist, yes, I always listen to music. And it's funny because I'm one of those people, I can, you know, filter it out and concentrate, but the right music puts me in the right mood. And there's a lot of soundtracks I love to listen to. Star Wars, obviously, but like the Matrix soundtrack just has some really great music in it, and Lord of the Rings, and just other soundtracks I've picked up. But sometimes, you know, I put on some AC/DC like Stephen King does, and just, you know, right to AC/DC rocking in my ears. So yeah, music is big, and both my kids played music, various instruments growing up. My daughter still plays guitar, and my son is telling me to pay off the drum kit quick so he can play some drums again. So yeah, I listen to a lot. In fact, I would love to get a really good suggested playlist to listen to while reading my books. You know, this chapter, this is a great song, this chapter, that type of thing, just for something to do. Haven't done it, you know, give me an extra hour each day and I'll get to it. So.
Well, this is an interesting challenge because we don't really have time to play all 97 of your favorite songs from that point of view. But I'm just thinking, Chloe, what would you recommend from your selection so far that we should maybe squeeze in here? I mean, I suspect you don't really do the AC/DC heavy rock material, but you have a more melodic sound. So what do you think we should put in for Stephen to actually listen to at present?
Do you mean another artist? Do you mean
from your own collection?
Oh, from myself. Oh, yeah. Well, because you were saying about magical things, and you know the story is very magical. Maybe Sky is Falling. It's not sad. It sounds sad, but it's not. But it's more about, you know, the end of the world, but in a positive way. So maybe that, I don't know. It feels magical.
Is that one of yours?
Yes, Sky is Falling. Yeah.
Send me a link. Yeah. Send it to me. I'll put it on my website and I'll put it in. Say, hey, Chloe recommended this song to listen to. We'll tell people about it. That'd be great.
Oh, thank you very much. Maybe that one or Golden Sun. One or the other.
We'll get with Sky is Falling.
Look out the window, scared what you might say, 'cause we're waiting for the world to end. look out the window. Scared what you might say, 'cause we're waiting for the world to end. Will we see this till the end? When the sky is falling down, down. When the sky is falling down.
Yes. One of the things I really want to try and encourage and do is making J.K. Rowling did a great job with her Pottermore, the online community. And I'd love to do something like that. Even though, you know, I'm just getting started, not many people have heard of it. I always have in the back of my book words to know and in ideas for other stories like fan fiction based on it. And parents, teachers, if you read the story with your kids and they write a story based on it, send it to me. If you say it's okay, I'll put it on the website. I'll link it in and include it as the overall. You know, if there's people with that draw and art and, hey, I drew your character, come on, I'd love to see it and put it up. It's a community thing is what I really want. You're an artist, you got music, and you think it'd be great for, you know, this book, this chapter, the end of this, send it. I'll include it. We'll make a whole, everybody, here's the pictures to go with the book. Here's the songs. That'd be awesome.
It's a Schneider smorgasbord.
That's right. That'd be great.
It works well. Stephen, let's go back to Lego, because we did say in terms of the brief here, since your Lego and action figure days, you crafted worlds and stories within those worlds. Now, clearly there are various generations of Lego fans. Chloe and myself were recently at the York Maze, which was celebrating the anniversary of Lego, of course. Everything was awesome. Everything is awesome. Are you a Star Wars Lego person? Are you more of a Ninja Lego person? Are you a Batman Lego person? Is it a case of, no, it's got to be original Lego? Where are we?
Well, you know, I definitely come in the era before the kits were as big as they are now. In fact, my grandmother worked at a big Goodwill distributor, which is a thrift store here in the States. And so when they would bring in stuff to clean and go through, if she saw Legos, she'd buy them off the store before they even went out. And a lot of times, because they were just pieces scattered, they'd just throw the stuff away because it was too much work. So literally for Christmas that one year, all of us cousins got a garbage bag of Lego. And there is nothing like dumping out a whole garbage bag of assorted Legos. No instructions, no kits, no whatever. You want to build a spaceship. You want to build a battle tank. You want to build anything. Well, just start doing it. And I love that better than the kits, because I know kids and adults that will get a kit and they like, okay, step one, and they put it all together. Oh, wow, now I got this great Lego kit, and it's a model kit. They put it on their shelf and they're done. I'm glad they enjoy it. Everyone each their own. But
isn't that the same as people who take a jigsaw puzzle and glue all the pieces down? Yes. So once they've done all the jigsaw thing, it's there forevermore.
Right. You know, and I always tell parents and kids and encourage people, hey, buy the bucket of Lego and just see what you can do. Dump them out on the floor and put them together and see what you get. That's much more memorable and fun and much more growth with the imagination and all of that. And, you know, I must say, my cousin has an 8-year-old grandson. So it's kind of fun being able to make the excuse, oh, I'm just playing with Finn and I'm putting Lego together. You know, and action figures, I got action figures on my desk. So
it's very important. I mean, at this stage, I should actually sort of bring on board the traditional mascot of our Batgirl. So without whom very few of these things can actually be sorted through. So hyper essential. And if we want to sort of keep the balance going between Marvel and DC, well, there's a Captain America as well that obviously does his business too. So it's important. Needless to say, Chloe, Spike is still very keen to actually say hello to you as well. So there we are, official mascot.
You've got you've got your own team right there. We need stories with those three. That you know, right there. That's not something I do on my website. I have what I call imagination inspiration pages, and it's prompt ideas or pictures or something. You know, that sounds like a great one to add. That for a teacher, a parent, take five stuffed animals, you know, and put them up with different characteristics or whatever, not just generic stuff. That's something good, and tell the kids, there you go. This is your superhero pet team. Make a story based on that. You know, a lot of people do prompts and it's like the first sentence of a story, but you put stuffed animals in front of them, tell them it's a superhero pet team, and now they come up with something. It sparks their imagination a little more than just a first sentence, I think. So I try and do stuff like that. So if you go to my site and see me with a superhero pet inspiration, there you go.
Of course, I have to point out, Stephen, that Spike, Batgirl, and indeed Captain America, they're not stuffed. You know, they have their own personalities. You know, I'd hate to sort of, you know, get them upset on that sort of basis. They're very important.
So when the camera's off, Alex is doing voices with them, right?
I'm not going to pass any comment whatsoever. Whereabouts in the States are you based, Stephen?
I am in Ohio, very close to Kent State, which everybody seems to know from the Kent State shootings way back when.
I would have said it's the banks of the Ohio, as in Olivia Newton-John singing about the banks of the Ohio.
Well, but there you go. I'm like an hour south of Lake Erie.
Yeah, so it all connects there, and obviously a magical world that's in there. We still haven't managed to get a sort of final choice musically from yourself and your range of 97. Is it going to be AC/DC? Is it going to be Star Wars theme? What would you like?
Oh, okay, so I mean, it's a huge long list, but what I've got up right here, what was just playing before I turned it off was Iko Iko from the Mission Impossible 2 soundtrack.
The Bell Stars.
Yes, the Bell Stars. Exactly. Yes, it was.
Iko Iko, it will be.
My grandma, sitting by the fire. My grandma said to your grandma, I'm gonna set your fire on fire. Talking about henna, henna, Iko Iko Ane, chicken mofino anane, chicken mofino.
And right above that is the Ewok Celebration, the original from Return of the Jedi. And then above that is Thunder from Imagination Dragons. Is that their name? Yeah.
Imagine dragons.
Yes, that's it. That's it. And then there's a Little Bitty Pretty One, which is a remake by Huey Lewis and the News, and then Friends in Low Places, Garth Brooks, and then a couple songs from the band I was in. So I got Hardware Store by Weird Al. I love Weird Al. He's one of my favorites still. Well, I went and saw him.
Weird Al Yankovic has his own part to play. Chloe, any closing questions from yourself?
Is there anything else, like another novel that you're writing at the moment that you could maybe tell us about or something, you know, what's happening?
Well, I've been nervous about putting things out and working on my writing. So I have 7 books planned for Town Magician, book 1 written with 4 short stories written and book 2 being worked on. But I have an earlier series that I started that just started off as a few short stories that's expanded into a two novel set, and it's kind of alternative history steampunk-ish spy thriller with the main character, a 10-year-old boy. It's kind of a Jedi Padawan thing going on, so I've got that. But then I also have a series. I used to write stories for my kids at Christmas, and some of those turned into a group that does paranormal investigation a la like Scooby-Doo, and they all have different abilities and stuff. So they're young adults in the stories, but just barely past teens. But they all have their own skills and they work together for paranormal investigations. And I've got 5 of those stories written that I'm expanding into little longer novels, along with an origin serial fiction that's on Kindle Vella right now, but I'm going to take it off and just put it on my website because I don't want people having to go pay Kindle Vella to read the story. So I'm going to include that. So I have got many things that are right on the cusp of being completed and out. So I'm hoping to get over the next year, every month or two, getting something new out, because all I got to do is a lot of it, finish it, edit, and put it out. Finish, edit, put it out. They're already mostly there. So that's the main stuff I'm working on. And then I have so many stories. I've got, you know, my notebook written. Here's other things I can do once I get all these things out. But I've got a couple years worth of releases ready to go right now.
And the magic will undoubtedly continue ever onwards, which is always very important. Yes. Where can people actually locate you on the web and listen to your podcast, Stephen?
Oh, yeah, my podcast. That's an author podcast. It's called Discovered Wordsmiths. Discoveredwordsmiths.com. Thank you for bringing that up. I each week a new author that you've probably never heard of with great books. And my website is, this is a horrible long one for some people, but it's S-A-Schneider, S-C-H-N-E-I-D-E-R. It's the German spelling, not the Americanized version. So that's where all the teacher resources and the learning and the study guides that are going out with my books and all of that are available, plus links to where the book's available as many places as I can get it.
Well, certainly Embracing the Magic, available now and worth accessing from S.A. Schneider. Absolute delight. We've got 2 final questions to put to you, of course. Stephen, first of all, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic / Zoom link, or indeed a reasonably interesting Zoomer with us on the program today?
Absolutely. You guys are fun. I like talking to you.
Well, then the next question, Chloe, is what?
Will you be returning to us? The Return of the Jedi, will you come back?
Will you let me come back? I'd love to come back.
Yes.
Chloe, I'd love to talk some more music with you, and maybe that'll be an inspiration. We can get something going with inspiring kids with music, because right now I have one with Ride of the Valkyries, you know, with an inspiration, because a lot of kids haven't heard it. You know, when you listen to it, it's so hard not to imagine what's going on with
Wagner.
That song.
What's not to love when you got some Wagner in there?
Right. Absolutely. So, that'd be great. You guys want to have me back on? I'd love to. Get a couple more books out and I'll have new things to show you and talk about.
Stephen, we will return.
Well,
I have no doubt.
Sure it will.
Thank you. And thank you.
Chloe, continue the excellent work with your recent single, of course, which is still available and you can access that. Of course, that's Golden Sun. Keep on keeping on, Chloe, and we'll speak again soon as well.
Thank you.
Just a young gun with a quick fuse. I was uptight, wanna let loose. I was dreaming of bigger things and wanna leave my old life behind. Not a yes sir, not a follower. Fit the box, fit the mold, have a seat in the foyer.
remember I was lightning before the thunder.
Thunder, 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 thunder,
thunder, thunder, thunder, thunder, thunder,
thunder,
thunder, feel the thunder. Lightning and the thunder. Thunder, feel the thunder. Lightning and the thunder. Thunder, thunder.
Kids were laughing in my classes while I was scheming for the masses. Who do you think you are? Dreaming about being a big star. They say you're basic, they say you're easy. You're always riding in the backseat. Now I'm smiling from the stage while you were clapping in the nosebleeds.
Thunder.
Well, we do like to be beside the seaside, but when we say we, do we also include our pets and in particular our canine friends? It may well be that you're considering making a journey to the seaside with your favourite family friend, but beware, you need to, according to More Than, certainly be concerned about some of the key things that can be there, such as litter, such as obviously making sure that your dog has plenty of fresh water to keep them hydrated, and so on. And to actually talk us through some of the key findings with respect to this and provide some very important sage advice, we're delighted to actually welcome the wonderful Luke Mangion. How are you, Luke?
Hi, I'm great, thanks. How are you?
Excellent. So, Luke, as a vet from this perspective, do you see many issues where owners have headed off to the seaside with their favourite friend and they've come back and they've had an injury or all sorts of challenges have emerged?
So in the last few years, we've seen a combination of factors. So we've had the pandemic and we've had the climate change issues, and we've also had an increase in staycations. And so with all those things put together, we've got an increased number of pets in the home. We've got more people visiting sites within the UK, and we've had much wider changes in temperature. So data from More Than has shown that because of things like heat waves and the increase in ownership, nearly two thirds of dog owners have found it difficult to keep their pets cool while they've been out and about in the sun while on the beaches in the UK.
Looking at the study, Luke, we certainly find, as you've addressed there, some of the key aspects that More Than are concerned about. But it seems if you're looking for the ideal dog-friendly beach, you need to have a shaded area, a fresh water supply, nearby parking, and perhaps most importantly, a large open sandy space.
Yes, exactly. So new data from More Than has shown that recent heat waves across the UK have resulted in an increase in heat stroke claims, which is not unexpected because pets in the UK are not really adapted to changes in temperature that we've been seeing. And so it's important when you are at these beaches that you have access to those shaded areas to avoid going into the sun at peak time.
So allowing for the old traditional line that only mad dogs and Englishmen go out in the midday sun, it's important, Luke, to acknowledge that you need to be aware of avoiding peak times where the sun's likely to be beating down on our pets as well.
Yes, exactly. With the recent increase in heat waves that we've been having across the UK, new Moreland data has shown that up to 63% of those owners have found it really difficult to keep their dogs cool while they're at the beach. And so one of the most important factors is to be aware of the times that you are exposing your pet to that sun. It doesn't even have to be necessarily on very sunny days. It can just be those hot days. But factors that we can control are things like what times we take our pets to the beach or expose them to that sun. So avoiding peak times between 11 a.m. and 3 p.m. can be really useful. So take them more early morning or later in the afternoon, where you know the sun isn't going to be out as much. It's a little bit cooler, and so they're able to heat exchange better. And because dogs cool themselves primarily through heat exchange, it's important that they are doing that or being taken out in times during the day where they're able to do that better.
It may seem rather obvious given that you're heading to the beach with your dog, but it's important to beware the sand, which I thought was quite interesting because obviously dogs have a tendency to eat stuff, and eating sand can be very problematic for them.
Absolutely. I mean, the first thing you think about when you take your pet to the beach is the sand, right? The sand and the sea. And this creates a couple of problems, actually, not just the fact that there can be all kinds of things in the sand on the beach. You know, people do unfortunately rubbish around or foreign body objects which your pet could eat and could make them sick or could potentially get stuck. But also, if we're talking about heat waves in the UK that we've been seeing lately, that sand can get very hot because it's still, it's just exposed to the sun all throughout the day. And so it can just get hotter and hotter, and it traps heat as well. So it can also get very hot for your pet's paws. So one thing we like to say is to do the palm test. If you put the back of your hand to the ground onto the sand, if you can't keep it there, if it's too painful, or if it burns you within just a few seconds, then it's also too hot for your pet. So it's important to make sure that you're testing that sand, you're not allowing them to be on it for too long or could be standing still on it, and to try and keep them to the shaded areas or to the areas of the sand that are where the water is coming in, and they can then cool themselves off as well.
When we talk about taking our dogs to the countryside, we obviously always ensure or recommend highly and very strongly that they should always be on a lead. That's the same for being on the coast as well, no doubt.
Absolutely. I mean, as a general rule, if you're going to places where there are going to be other people about or other dogs, you never know what the situation is with those other dogs and those other owners. Some pets may be more wary of other dogs. Some may be anxious dogs. And so they're finding their own space. But if another pet comes into their space, it can be very daunting for them. So that alone is a reason to take them on a lead. But also, on these coasts, we have a lot of wildlife, a lot of things the dogs may not have come across before. So it's important that they're not just running off and exposing themselves to those things. For instance, we have seal pups that can be on these beaches. You don't want your dog running up to and scaring those seal pups. Or there could be jellyfish around, and your pet is going to put their nose into anything and sniff it because they live their lives through their noses. But the risk is even then, you know, jellyfish can still sting even when they're dead and washed up onto the shore. So it's important that you keep sight of your pet at least, or if you can, keep them on a lead for at least a portion of the time that they're at the beach.
And speaking of swimming, dogs, do they like to swim? Are there any particular breeds that like to swim more than others? And if they do swim, presumably the same rules as applying to human swimmers also apply to dogs. Don't go in if you're even an experienced swimmer if the tides and currents are going to be treacherous.
Yes, exactly. I mean, I don't know a single dog that doesn't like to swim. They see the water and they just immediately go for it. I mean, I don't know if you watch videos on social media, they seem to be the ever popular videos are seeing our pets doing things that they love, and being at the beach is one of those things. And you just see those dogs bolting for the water. It doesn't matter what breed it is. It can range from miniature breeds all the way to large breed dogs. They absolutely love it. And that's part of the joy of why owners are taking their pets to these beaches and why dog-friendly beaches have become so popular in the UK. But absolutely, as you say, even dogs that are good swimmers, it's important that they're not going out in times where the tide might be high or there are tide waves in there, because much like humans, we can get caught up in them quite easily. And we can be much more advanced swimmers than dogs. So sometimes you can even just check online before you go, just to make sure that you're going at a good time where the tides are not too high or there aren't any rip tides occurring when you're visiting.
And finally, Luke, where can people find out more about Morthan's top tips and indeed advice from your good self about how to actually ensure that our pet canine friends are also happy if they head off to the seaside with us?
So they can just check out the morethan.com website, which will provide them with plenty of information. It should also be able to show them the research that Morthan recently did about taking their pets to the beaches and what constitutes dog-friendly beaches for owners through the research that they did, such as making sure that they've got enough water to keep them hydrated, about keeping their pets' paws safe from the hot ground and from stopping them eating rubbish left on the beach, things like that, because they performed a lot of research that showed that about two-thirds of owners find it difficult to protect their dogs from the sun while on the beach. And so this information is out there to hopefully help them identify those beaches that they can go to where that isn't so much of a worry, and just give them a bit more peace of mind.
Veterinary surgeon extraordinaire Luke Mangion, huge thanks from ourselves and, of course, our canine friends too.